Okay, today our speaker is Joe C, who has agreed to come in and talk to us about the delisting of secular AA or the attempted delisting of secular AA in Toronto. So, Joe, you are on, darling.
Now I'm unmuted. How about that? I'm Joe, proud member of Beyond Belief, Agnostics and Freethinkers AA group in Toronto, Canada. And speaking about this topic, it's something, while I know a lot about it, while I was directly involved in it, this is one member's opinion and one member's experience. Hopefully it'll be more experience than opinion and conjecture. So it's a story of it's a great story for AA history for sure. And this is something which happened in Toronto between 2011 and 2017. It's page 8 news now. In case I forget to mention it, agnostic atheist members and groups are as welcome in Toronto AA as anywhere. I just recently served on the Toronto Intergroup Finance Committee. If we're willing to do some of the work of AA, they're happy to have us. If you search under meetings in Toronto, there's several filters. One of them is now secular. So if you just wanted to find the secular meetings in Toronto AA, or if you just wanted to find the big book meetings in Toronto AA, or speaker or women's meetings or whatever else, you can do that now. But nevertheless, it still is a good case history, I think, for what can happen with zealotry. There was if you own more than one AA service manual, you're probably an AA nerd, just a warning. And I grabbed one of mine, and this is a little reading from Concept 5, which is all about the right of appeal, and that the minority opinion should be heard, and petitions for redress of personal grievances should be carefully considered. And Bill Wilson in his essay talks about de Tocqueville, if I'm pronouncing that right. I've only ever seen it written. He was a Frenchman who came over to the United States at the beginning of democracy in America and wrote a book about it. And it's still often used in sort of history classes. But here he's talking about this outsider's view of this experiment, which was a democratic society. And here he says that de Tocqueville insisted that the greatest danger to democracy would always be the tyranny of apathetic, self-seeking, uninformed, and angry majorities. Only a truly dedicated citizenry, quite willing to protect and conserve minority rights and opinions, could, he thought, guarantee the existence of a free and democratic society. De Tocqueville would have none of that tyranny, and that we AAs can readily agree with them. There's also some great stuff if you're perusing that particular reading in Concept 12, Warranty 6, about what I call the inalienable rights of members and groups. Our rights aren't granted by AA, so they can't be taken away by AA. They're inalienable. In other circles, they would call these rights God-given rights. They're above law and man. But inalienable is the legal term. So in 2011, Let's go back a little bit. In a U of T classroom in September 24th, 2009, the currently longest running secular AA meeting in Canada held its first meeting. There were about 16 to 20 in attendance. 12 members joined the group that night. By 2011, Beyond Belief had moved from one night to twice a week, and the We Agnostics group was started by members, some of the members who were in attendance at that first Beyond Belief meeting. They started a Tuesday night meeting in Midtown Toronto at a Unitarian Universalist congregation. If you know Toronto, it was on St. Clair between Avenue Road and Spadina. And in April of 2011, in the Greater Toronto Area Intergroup, a new operating chair was elected, Barbara H. She took the gavel for the first time. And the first new business she would oversee was welcoming a motion to remove the Agnostic Atheist AA groups because they read their own agnostic interpretation of the 12 steps. And however you feel about that, whether they should, they shouldn't, we should, we shouldn't, there's no rule against it. And in May, that GTAI, Greater Toronto Area Intergroup meeting voted. Here's one of the biggest problems. In a city of well over 200 groups, it only took 24 groups because of the apathy to AA service. 24 groups voted to kick the groups out of Toronto. There were 15 that were opposed and 9 abstained. Including in those abstentions were both of our secular groups, because neither of us saw the legitimacy of intergroup or any central office policing groups, having scrutiny over groups, or even speaking to what happens inside those groups. So we argued our case, but we didn't recognize the process as legitimate. And over the next few years, we made many attempts with the intergroup to resolve the problem. And so we saw several new intergroup chairs, and they all, when we spoke to them one-on-one, they were emotionally invested in fixing the problem, admitting there was a problem and fixing the problem, but they couldn't appeal to the fundamentalists who were unapologetic about their mission from God to keep AA pure. And the matter would not be resolved until Larry Kay, a member of We Agnostics, and around 20 years sober at the time, circumvented the dead end at intergroup by filing a complaint of discrimination with the Ontario Human Rights Commission. Now, human rights in Canada, they're the law. And violating someone's human rights, any organization, government, agency, or business, they would be in contravention of Canadian law. And so this matter would eventually be mediated between the AA member who filed the complaint, Larry, by representatives, legal and AA members from the Greater Toronto Area Intergroup, and from AA World Services, who was not enthusiastic about being involved in this process at all. In fact, they petitioned the Ontario Human Rights Commission saying, hey, not our monkey, not our circus. We didn't delist these groups. And it's worth noting that while these groups were removed from the meeting list, which was the motion before the floor, and then the executive committee of intergroup decided they would further add to that enthusiasm that we would no longer have a voice at intergroup and no longer be able to participate or vote. While that was true, we were completely welcome at our district and our area, and they never once spoke out against us in any way, or they were agnostic about what was going on in intergroup, and we were still voting rights-bearing members of the larger AA process. So AA World Services tried to argue with the Human Rights Tribunal that, look, we haven't rejected these groups. We recognize their autonomy. We don't want to be involved. And as far as the Ontario Human Rights Commission was concerned, was does this organization that delisted them call themselves Alcoholics Anonymous? And yes, they did. It was the Greater Toronto Area Intergroup of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you sell books and literature to the people of Ontario, Canada? Yes, we do. Well, then it is, in our opinion, you have a fiduciary responsibility to your members in Ontario. So I hope you haven't, hope you can cancel your plane ticket back home, stick around. So they were part of the process, and a very useful, reluctant, but a very useful part of resolving the matter. So to understand a little bit about, because I mean, we're talking to people here from all over the world. Not everybody has a human rights tribunal. Some people's rights are protected by their constitution or other parliamentary laws. But understanding what is going on in Canada, the Human Rights Code doesn't allow discrimination based on creed. It's against the law. Everyone should have access to the same opportunities and benefits and be treated with equal dignity, respect, regardless of their creed. If you want to learn more about the Ontario Human Rights Code and Tribunal, I'll put it in the chat. I won't go into the minutia of it because it doesn't apply to everybody, but if you're curious, knock yourselves out. So the goal is of accommodation is to allow people with different creed beliefs, including no creed belief at all, this is right off of their website, to equally benefit and take part in the workplace, services, or housing. Intergroup is considered a service provider under the Ontario Human Rights Code. No one should have to choose between following their creed and taking part in society. So if someone asks for an accommodation, let's say someone in a wheelchair can't access a meeting because there's no ramp, they can ask for accommodation, and there is a duty of the organization to meet that accommodation. So when someone is asked for an accommodation, here are the rules for an organization, including AA. Treat the accommodation as sincere, made in good faith. Deal with it quickly, even if you have to create a temporary solution while you develop a long-term one. Take an active role in making sure that alternative approaches and possible accommodations are investigated. Always look for and provide the most appropriate accommodation in the situation, unless it would cause undue hardship. It's supposed to cause some hardship, but it shouldn't cause undue hardship. What would be an example of undue hardship? Let's say our members were asking that all of the literature in Ontario be changed to secular literature because we're offended by the theism. Well, that might be, it was never asked for, but that might be considered an undue hardship, where accommodations can be made for secular groups to be part of AA and to conduct themselves in accordance with what they need, but maybe asking AA to change everything to accommodate the minority, maybe that would be tyranny of the minority. I don't know, it's never been tested. But they have to respond to individual needs, and has to, the solution has to allow for integration and full participation and cover any costs of the accommodation. So if someone says, hey, your front door is accessible, it's got an electric door, but the bathroom isn't, right? Like I can't get into the bathroom. There would be a cost involved in accommodating that disability discrimination. And so it's understood that there will be costs associated with accommodation, but where they are undue and would cause like bankruptcy or what have you, sometimes there are competing needs, competing human rights, and then those sort of things have to be worked out. Now, agnostic group issues was not, and I want to make this quite clear, this wasn't atheists and agnostics against AA, or it wasn't atheists and agnostics against believers. It was a discrepancy or a fight between AA as a pluralist society, whereby members and group rights are inalienable, versus AA fundamentalism. And because believing in the big book as the best solution for recovery, believing in the steps exactly as written, that isn't fundamentalist. Believing that because that's what works for you and nobody else is allowed to do anything else, that would be fundamentalism. Just for the purposes of curiosity, I pulled this sort of definition off the intergroup. Fundamentalism is here taken to be a collection of infallible beliefs or principles that provide guidance regarding how to obtain salvation. Religious fundamentalists believe in the superiority of their religious teachings and in a strict division between righteous people and evildoers. This belief system regulates religious thought, but also conceptions regarding the self, others, and the world. Fundamentalists not only increase the subjective feeling of control, but that it also fosters self-regulation and more specifically self-control. Self-control is the ability to direct one's behavior in ways that are in line with rules and standards that are meaningful. Means of self-control, one may reinforce attention, alter one's moods or emotional state, overcome fatigue, resist temptation, or in various other ways, change one's state of mind or one's actions. In order to behave virtuously, such as avoiding vice or sin, self-control is necessary. Indeed, research has shown that religious fundamentalism is positively related to temptation resistance, the endurance of discomfort and ability to delay gratification, and response accuracy. Fundamentalism has demonstrated that it provides individuals with a sense of meaning in life and that it offers relief and distress from uncertainty. So there's room for fundamentalism in AA, but the problem in Toronto was it gained control over the agenda in AA. What happens in someone's meetings, what they agree with or disagree with, I think should be perfectly legitimate. I spoke out against the Great Britain General Service delisting a Christian AA meeting that read the Bible. I thought that what they do in their meeting should be perfectly allowable. And in the same way, I think our group should be allowed to do whatever we want. I'm a big preponderant that these limits and liberties. Bill Wilson wrote in Warranty 6, because we set such a high value on our great liberties and cannot conceive a time when they need to be limited, we enjoin our General Service Conference to abstain completely from any and all acts of authoritative government which could in any way curtail AA's freedom. I don't think there's anything wrong with thinking my home group is the greatest home group in the world. that's human nature, that's tribalism, that's great. But when it sort of crosses the line and imposes how other people should behave, I think that's what happened. I saw online that there are certain precepts for what's the difference between enthusiasm or zealotry. Where does that sort of cross the line to fundamentalism? And I found these four precepts, and I thought they sort of pertain to what happened in Toronto Intergroup. And I've sort of used some artistic liberty in describing them in AA terms. Precept one, the belief that there is a single set of teachings containing the fundamental, basic, intrinsic, inherent truth about God, mankind, and addiction. Precept two, the essential truth stands in opposition to evil, which must be actively fought. Precept three, the truth is to be followed in our current day according to the fundamental practices of the past. And precept four, people who follow these steps, exactly as described in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, have a special relationship with God. So what happened in Toronto was this sort of fundamentalism became organized. Lots of people don't believe there should be atheists or agnostics. Lots of people don't believe there should be any special purpose groups. There are some parts of the world where you can't register a young people's group or a women's group or a men's group or atheist agnostic groups because their general service conference doesn't recognize that. And they have the autonomy to do that. But in some places, it's against the rules. So people on both sides started organizing as this between the time of this sort of floor motion and the vote. And here was a letter that came from the General Service Office, which I think is really shows you that it wasn't agnostics against AA. Thank you so much for being in touch and for your question. I'm the correspondent for Eastern Canada, and I'm glad to be able to respond to you. I read your message several times, and I keep coming back to it. It's something that I wish I could phrase a little bit more delicately. What the other AA group does is none of your group's business. In taking another group's inventory with regard to the traditions is just not done. What a slippery slope that could be. AA's experience suggests that business meetings are used to conduct business of the AA group and its meeting. And as described in the conference pamphlet, the AA group, blah, blah, blah. And I sincerely hope that you will impress upon them, the other group members, the importance of considering the independence of groups. If they are concerned about confusing or upsetting newcomers, consider what you can do in your group to prevent that. That was from Mary Claire L., who was with the GSO. At the time, Rob was the Area 83 delegate, and he was asked to take sides. And he wrote back and said, it seems that this subject has turned into a hot topic in the Toronto area. I've received numerous emails and phone calls about a particular group in the GTA that is using their own version of the 12 steps. The only rules that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous are those which we impose upon ourselves. We do not force people or groups, district, or areas to conform to our will. While conformity to the principles set out in the 12 steps is suggested, it's still only a suggestion. That being said, tradition 4 states that each group is autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Many things are done in AA groups, districts, and areas under the banner of group autonomy. This is rightly so, although we need to keep in mind the second half of the tradition, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. It is the responsibility of the General Service Conference to preserve the integrity of the steps and traditions. If a group chooses to use its own interpretations of the 12 steps and traditions, they should have the freedom to do so. Where is it? There is only one requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it does not include belief in God. So we tried as much as we could to sort of reason with intergroup, and eventually Larry K got fed up, as any individual in Ontario can, and pressed the point with the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal. He didn't need AA's permission. He didn't need his group's permission. He went ahead to do so. And had he not done that, I don't think the matter would have been resolved. I had actually called the Human Rights Tribunal and was told that they would entertain our case. I brought it up before our group, and you can appreciate that a group that doesn't believe in any intervening higher power, some of them don't put a lot of faith or belief in intervening government agencies. We're from the government and we're here to help. Not exactly the way a lot of our sort of rugged individualist atheists and agnostics saw the world. They didn't want to really discredit AA. They didn't want to see this whole circus publicly brought forward. If we could resolve the matter ourselves and personally, all the better. But Larry took the initiative, and there were a number of articles. You can look them up. Does Religion Belong in AA? Fight Over AA Splits Toronto AA Groups. Google that. It's still out there. It was by Leslie Shrivener with the Toronto Star. There was another one, Alcoholics Anonymous Accused of Discrimination. And there it wrote that it quotes Larry, "The reason we went this way is because 3 years of discussion, nothing was happening. The clock ran out and we're still not allowed to vote. It's important to feel that we're equal partners in the opportunity to speak." And GTAI, our intergroup office, argued that the members must be prepared to practice the 12-step program and have a belief in God. And Larry Knight disagreed. So this was something that was actually in the pleadings for Toronto Intergroup, arguing that they have a right to discriminate against groups that don't believe in God and refuse to read the 12 steps exactly as written. And this is in the public record, so I'm not throwing stones or telling tales. The respondent, GTAI, submits that Alcoholics Anonymous Recovery Program follows 12 steps, and these steps involve a belief in God. Intergroup submits that the purpose is to practice the 12 steps and to believe in God. In order to be part of intergroup, a group must be prepared to practice the 12 steps, and thus a member of the group, as members of the group, they must have a belief in God. It further went on to say, intergroup also submits that it is a bona fide requirement that groups that wish to be part of intergroup must have a belief in the higher power of God. So this wasn't just a Toronto problem, by the way. Let's get some perspective on this. This was going on in Indianapolis as well. They were in a fight. And if you Google Saturday, June 11th, 2011 blog from Indy We Agnostics, you can find this blog where it talks about the Indianapolis Intergroup Service Committee meeting on June 9th, 2011, and how it was a kangaroo court where they were having a fair trial before the hanging of the We Agnostics. One person said they can't be AA because they don't believe in God. Obviously, God isn't expressing himself through their group conscience, so they're not a group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Interesting argument, interesting interpretation. So where did this organized anti-non-believer thing come from? Well, there was something called a white paper on non-believers. And I first found out about this because I was accidentally included in a petition to intergroup members warning them about the dangers of these secular groups. Remember the precepts. I'm going to read a few little excerpts from this white paper. While it is its author is anonymous, and I found it on 164fl.com, which is a Florida first 164 page group website. It was called the Minority Report, the White Paper on Non-Believers. This document was circulated to Toronto Intergroup members, as I mentioned. And I still don't know for sure who it was. I have people who swear they do know who it was. It is a now deceased, very popular circuit speaker from the Washington area who retired to Florida, but he's dead and can't defend himself, whether he wrote it or not. Whoever wrote it isn't important. The fact that it had such an impact in alarming AA members, I think, is what is important. And let's remember those four precepts as I read a few excerpts of this. That there is a single set of teachings containing the fundamental, basic, intrinsic, inherent truth about God and AA. Precept two, the essential truth stands in opposition to evil. So obviously we agnostics and atheists are the evil ones and must be actively fought. That number three is the truth is to be followed in our current day, according to the fundamental practices of the past. That's an interesting one. I mean, this sort of revisionist history about this is how AA has always been. You know, agnostics and atheists aren't the first people ever to get sober without following the 12 steps exactly as written. Another example of people who did that were the people who wrote the Big Book. None of them knew the 12 steps. This was all pre-12 steps. And there's no stories in the Big Book of people referring to working the 12 steps exactly as written. But anyway, there's this idea that somehow Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob were taking their sponsees through the Big Book and working the steps exactly as written. Although I've never seen any account from either of them that this is how they worked with newcomers. It's called revisionist history. But it's a big part of the more sort of fundamentalist school of AA. And precept four is people who follow these steps exactly as described in the book have a special relationship with God. So this white paper, it's prepared to remind us that the guiding force ensuring the future of the fellowship, not only for individual AA members, but for AA as a whole, we must view with great alarm the ongoing deviations from these principles, which are occurring within the fellowship on a regular basis. So the action that this author wants to take is eliminating them from returning our fellowship to and returning our fellowship to the pure spiritual oasis that has nourished suffering alcoholics for 75 years. We would all be remiss in our responsibilities if we failed at this crucial juncture. So they make an enemy and they sort of associate this enemy with the destruction of Alcoholics Anonymous. They also include on their enemies list the General Service Office, and some of our trustees regarding expanding our membership is extremely disconcerting. It is in a not so subtle way, the idea is being advanced that we could make our fellowship more inclusive. The author believes that AA has made an honest error in judgment by supporting the existence of atheist and agnostic AA groups. Unfortunately, this is but one symptom of a deeper and more pervasive problem within our fellowship, namely the constant watering down of the central role which God has intended to play in our fellowship. After all, the ultimate authority for us is a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. So here's a little sort of shot to the evil which is from within. All of us know that AA can't be hurt from anything occurring outside the fellowship. Our only danger will lie within. Since the very survival of AA's vessel is dependent on our collective relationship with a loving God as he expresses himself to us, this critical leak must be repaired and sealed as soon as possible. Should this small crack in the AA dam widen, we may wish we had acted sooner. The AA approach for atheists and agnostics to urge them to keep an open mind and to slowly move away from their old ideas and towards God, their understanding. Nowhere does our literature suggest that AA or its members could assist newcomers to find a way to get sober without God. They began to seek greater presence for atheist agnostics material in our publications. And the decision by AA to sanction, not object to, the formation of atheist agnostic groups calling themselves AA was never seriously discussed or debated. It was simply accepted as a matter of courtesy, and because grounds for their not accommodating them were never examined. The fellowship has a hard time saying no to anybody. Failure to conform to this critical requirement to ever be considered an AA group should result in the group being prohibited from calling itself an AA group. And he goes on to say that the idea that maybe one day the big book would include stories of atheists and agnostics who haven't had to find God would be completely unacceptable. He's, of course, passed away now. There's more to this. If you want a copy of it, I call it the Mein Kampf of AA thinking, because it's like to go into it more can be very upsetting. I find it very disturbing. I don't think fundamentalism on either end of the sort of political spectrum is helpful in AA. In your own group, you can be either pro big book or against the big book. Fine. Why not? But to try to control what I do in my group or they do in their group. And I've been guilty of this myself. I have to look at my own sort of fundamentalism or the creep of absolute thinking of how I'm right and they're wrong, that they're evil, that it's those big book thumpers that are lowering the membership numbers in AA. They're embarrassing us. Why would I care what they do in their group? Let them do what they want. And I try more in my own AA practice to shine the light as I see it instead of fighting the darkness. Now, what actually happened? So there was this effort to delist the groups. This fed over into the Vancouver agnostic groups. Some of the fundamentalists there gleefully followed the Toronto approach. One of the fallouts was something I call the law of unintended consequences. In 2011, when they kicked out two groups so that they would end atheism in AA forever, there were 100 groups worldwide that called themselves atheist agnostic groups. By the time they put us back in 2017, there were 400 groups. So this, I think, is the law of unintended consequences, because it drew attention to the idea of should AA be inclusive or should it be exclusive? And I want to say that our group was, in its early days, was supported by not only atheists and agnostics tired of one view of AA recovery, but also of very liberal-minded believers who thought that, of course, there should be atheist and agnostic groups. They worked with newcomers who this was the biggest barrier there was for AA. And if they had a group or a sponsor they could point them to who could speak their own language, they should go for it. P17, that's pamphlet 17, is called The AA Traditions, How They Begin. And Bill Wilson wrote there, perhaps this trend signifies something much deeper than a mere change of attitudes on the question of membership. Perhaps it means that we are losing all fear of those violent emotional storms which sometimes cross our alcoholic world. Perhaps it bespeaks our confidence that every storm will be followed by a calm which is more understanding, more compassionate, more tolerant than any we've ever known before. So, like I say, it's page 8 news in Toronto. I hope whatever harm was caused, that the good that came from it has increased. I'm a big fan of Arthur Schopenhauer, who died in 1860, but even then he saw that all truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as being self-evident. And I think we're at that stage in Toronto AA where, of course, agnostic atheist groups are part of AA. They're no more or less AA than, the LGBTQIA groups, which are accepted here in Toronto, women's groups, young people's groups, big book groups, whatever groups, right? I think we're on the other side of this problem, but I don't think men's groups, of course, yes. Isn't that funny that white privileged males would feel ostracized and need the protection of their own clan to feel safe in AA. but again, I'm not pointing fingers at what should or shouldn't be. In terms of special purpose groups, which I've done a lot of study of, nothing has bolstered my interest in AA and my sort of authorship of all things AA and special interest groups and doing primary firsthand research in AA archives in Toronto and in GSO than this Toronto debacle. They've made me a better historian because we've been there before and we just have to guard against being there again. And if anyone wants any details about the minutiae, I really think this has had an effect on the AA safety card. The AA safety card specifically says, if a law is broken, speak out. AA isn't the mafia. We're not the family. We don't handle our situations. We're not a country unto its own with its own laws. We have to live within the laws in our jurisdiction. And Larry faced a lot of heat in mainstream AA and even in agnostic AA about sort of bringing this up into the public sphere, but he was right to do so. And it worked out in our favor. And I got lots more, but this isn't a weekend seminar. It's an AA meeting, and I would really love to hear what other people have to say. Thanks for your attention.
Joe, thank you so much. Because of the historic and educational value of this, I'm going to leave the recording running through the questions. Feel free to not use your name if you would like to ask anything. You're welcome to not introduce yourself, to just go ahead and ask, since we're going to leave it on. And the floor is open. I'm going to not go ahead and introduce you. If I unmute you, you can just go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. Joe, very interesting. Wonderful. I have been doing a bit of reading in this myself, and I want to push the case to the other side. I don't understand how they lost this. I really don't. I think I don't, maybe you can tell me if I'm right, that somehow it hinged on the fact that the Human Rights Court defined it as a service organization, and therefore it is open to the human rights laws. If, on the other hand, they've got their act together and declared themselves a religious organization, which other courts have actually defined them as, then they could have gone for an exemption. Because the human rights laws, many of them do not apply. You cannot be forced to employ an atheist teacher in a religious school, you know, things like that, you know. So, and I completely accept that. I don't know whether this was beneficial or not for secular AAers or secular people in recovery. You know, for me, AA is clearly a sort of evangelical religious conversion organization. And that's made plain in the chapter, Do We Agnostics? And as such, as an atheist, I cannot consider myself a member of AA. I certainly cannot consider myself to be following the AA 12 steps. Also, I don't understand why they don't sue for breach of copyright anyone that publishes a book that uses the title AA and any alternative 12 steps, because they're not the 12 steps. They belong to AA as written in the big book. So if you rewrite them, surely that's an infringement of copyright. The question of whether or not atheists and agnostics can be a member of AA, obviously, yes, you have this group autonomy stuff, but I would argue maybe it was the worst thing that ever happened. We'd have been better off if we'd been thrown out. We would have been forced into defining ourselves. Traditional AA would have been forced into declaring what it actually is, which is a religious organization, and everybody would have known where they stand. As it is at the moment, we're in this wishy-washy state, and I think the division is coming. They are going to wake up, and they are going to realize that, well, what secular meetings and things are doing and diluting the original message. It's already happening, and I think they're quite right to. They are what they are, and I am not a member, and have no desire to use the title of AA, as because that for me is exemplified in the writings of the Big Book, which are clearly religious. So I'd be really interested in why they did they argue that they're a religious organization, and would that have won them the case?
Some great points there. One, in terms of interpreting the 12 steps, the author of them, an AA itself, considers the 12 steps to be not an invention of AA, because there isn't a single original thought or idea in them. They were just borrowed from psychology, religion, therapy, what have you. So there's nothing that can be like in its whole form. It is these are the copywritten 12 steps, but any adaptation of them and that sort of thing is not a violation according to US law. Now, in the Ontario Human Rights Code, there is an exception for giving people the right to discriminate. And one of them is religious organizations. In the example you gave, a Catholic school could not hire a more qualified teacher in favor of a Catholic teacher. They can absolutely do that. And Toronto Inner Group started going down that road. And from my understanding, I wasn't in the room, that's where the General Service Office said, they said, well, if you want to go down that road, you can't call yourself Alcoholics Anonymous. right? You'll be delisted, right? And because it's right in the title of the registered name of the Greater Toronto Area Intergroup of Alcoholics Anonymous. So they chose not to go that way. And because of a few things that, again, this never went to a hearing. This was mediated, right? If it went to a hearing, who knows? Maybe AA would have been declared religious. I don't know. But it was mediated between the parties involved. And certainly the parties involved, I can't speak for intergroup today, but I think intergroup today would include themselves in this group. Does respect the autonomy, does respect the tradition of the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. And I know how you feel and why you feel about the primacy of the big book and the 12 steps. But I luckily grew up in an AA that was pre-fundamentalism. If anybody read the big book in the neighborhood I got sober in, I don't know who they were because they never quoted it. They never, as Bill says in chapter blah, 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 there was none of that. I was sober 11 years before I'd even been to a big book meeting. They didn't exist when the author existed. It came after that sort of, but this is AA today. That's right. But agnostic atheist AA is also AA today. And what I love about AA is you can declare yourself not an AA member against AA and participate in AA. That's fabulous to whatever extent you want. Okay. Did I answer all your questions, Cynthia? Thanks.
Add her up. That's you, honey. You're already unmuted.
Okay. Thank you. Joe, thank you for speaking today, and thank you so much for bringing up the group in Great Britain that got delisted for the Bible. I'm going to try and say I instead of we. It's really hard for me. I feel really passionately about, you know, if we're going to be respected, or I should say I am going to be respected as an atheist and they have rights not to believe. I personally feel a duty to defend other people's right to believe. And I'm so glad that you spoke up about that and spoke out against that decision. I got real mad when I saw various people celebrating this decision. And I just, to me, it's very short-sighted. And you know what? We don't have to believe the same things. But the one thing I do feel that if, you know, if we want to be AA members, you know, this is, for me, this is a we thing. Like, we have to defend each other, you know. Outside of AA, another story. But I'm not going to bring my feelings and thoughts and opinions inside these rooms. I try not to, at least, you know. I really feel very strongly about defending other people's rights to do what they want. It's about autonomy for me. That's all I have. And again, thank you so much, Joe.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Thank you for your sharing and all the information you have. Hi, my name is Edgar. I'm a member of AA. So for me, it's very helpful to me because I belong to AA. I belong to that fellowship. Of course, I need this fellowship to my recovery, and something that I have been fighting is not create a personal fight, a personal purpose to stay in AA. It's very difficult to me. Very difficult. I don't know what can I do if you don't exist or living in AA every day is too hard. So, but I try. In Spanish, we have only 2 years. We only start this process, and it's very difficult. Sometimes, some days I feeling that I have a fight with all the culture in Latin America. We are very religious around here, so no matter if I do the right thing, but I guess I try to think I'm part of AA, and I'm glad to be part of AA. I'm grateful to be part of AA, but I need to divide my recovery into sides once I is here, because yeah, it's really hard for me. But that's why the reason I really appreciate you, Joe, for this type of sharing, this type of knowledge. Helped me a lot. Thank you.
Go ahead, darling. Maggie?
Oh, hi. Yes, I saw somebody else was before me. Good afternoon, everyone. I was very interested. I didn't know what the subject was going to be, but when Megan said, I think you'll be really interested speaking to you collectively, I noticed people have been leaving because it's not the subject that interests them. Their recovery maybe is more important right now. My question, which I put in the chat, was, did this two parts to the question. Did this controversy exist mostly among male sector on both ends of the spectrum, or was it widespread with men, women, trans? Was it evenly divided, or is there not enough data to answer that question? That's question number one. I often ask questions that nobody can answer. My brother-in-law from Harvard criticized me on this point. And it really, it was my first year of sobriety. I asked him, why don't limes, because they were making margaritas, why don't limes have seeds? And he said, oh, Maggie, stop asking questions that nobody can answer or that I can't answer, is what he said. Anyway, that's a digression. The second part of the question is, oftentimes I feel as if Canada and Mexico are going to encompass this continent that we call North America, and we're all going to become in survival mode, with Canada and Mexico being at the forefront. And so what happens in Canada is, I think, a forerunner to what's going to happen on, is happening on. In other words, you Canadians are far more advanced, in my opinion. That's why so many of our people went to your side of the border. So I'm pontificating now, but I do have that question about whether this was a gender biased argument or not. Thank you.
In my own observation and opinion, I see in our own demographics, while our culture just outside the doors of AA gets more and more diverse, AA is going in the opposite direction. We're whiter than we used to be. We're older than the general population. And Toronto AA, while in the city of Toronto, we answer 911 calls in over 150 languages. RAA looks like it's 1950. It's very few visible minorities, more male than female, although there were people with their hands up to delist us from both genders for sure.
Hi, folks. Thanks, Joe. That was a great conversation. I was one of the very fortunate ones that a secular meeting started in my hometown back in the mid-80s. So I guess I was one of those 100 meetings that happened before all this Toronto hoopla. I absolutely feel privileged that I've been able to attend secular meetings this long. And quite honestly, I had no idea there were other secular meetings anywhere. I knew there was meetings in New York because there was a snowbird from New York that started my meeting in Boca Raton, Florida. She wanted what she had in New York. So I knew there were meetings there, but I had no idea about LA and Chicago and all these other places where they existed. When I moved away from Boca in 2010, I was in a place where there were no secular meetings. And I decided to stop into the local intergroup office and get a where and when, because I was going to find a LGBTQ meeting to go to, because they're typically, more progressive. And I ran into this guy that was working the phones that day, and he told me about a website called AA Agnostica. And that turned me on and introduced me to all these secular meetings that were all over the place, plus secular literature and blah, 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 blah. I had no idea all that existed. But that website was created by a guy in Toronto to let people know about Toronto's secular meetings while they had been delisted. That was its sole purpose. And it expanded beyond that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but it expanded beyond that, and it's still there today. And it's like the central hub for secular AA. It's just this beautiful thing that has grown out of this controversy in Toronto. And it has connected all these secular people in AA all over the world. And now, but you mentioned there were like 400 meetings, or it grew to like 400 from 100 or something like that.
Between the time we were delisted and the time it was resolved, there was a 400% increase.
I dare say that it's far beyond that today, especially with the advent of Zoom meetings and everything. We're just like all over the place. And it's just this incredible, beautiful thing that we're getting A's message in a secular format out there for people that need to get sober, get clean. It just it's just this incredible thing. The growth is like almost beyond comprehension. You know, the Toronto incident was a springboard for all of this. You know, all of a sudden, boom, everything happened. You know, and I just, you know, I'm very grateful that Larry took that stance and won his case, and that we've, that we're here today to talk about it. You know, it's just a great thing. Thanks, Joe.
You bet.
And thanks, Megan, for chairing.
Thanks, Dale. Mikey.
Hey, I'm Mikey, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Joe, as always. Your perspective is amazing, and you've actually changed my opinion on a lot of the things about other fellowships, other meetings. You know, it's interesting, and I don't know what the difference is in Toronto versus the U.S., but I'm thinking solution-based. Our group, a secular group in Orlando, we had a little bit of pushback at the beginning, but what we did was we became very involved in the service structure. One of our members is the district DCM now, or the area DCM. People send their atheist sponsees to our group. We also did a big outreach thing where we found every probation officer and judges, which that didn't help much, but probation officers, and we sent out something that basically said, you know, there is a secular alternative in Orlando, and we get people coming in all the time. It's interesting about what happened in Toronto, because in the U.S., there's been a couple cases where they've determined that AA is religious, particularly the one about the jail, the guy that was in jail and he couldn't get out on, you know, extra because he had to go to AA meetings, and he said he can't. But AA, the actual AA website now has an official AA app, and it's called Meeting Guide, and they have an atheist section or an atheist search thing. So I think maybe it's getting more accepted, or at least tolerated, in the U.S. I know that I've been to some secular meetings that I wouldn't consider, you know, necessarily a traditional agnostic meeting. But it's if it helps someone, I don't see how taking any meetings away is helpful to anyone. I wish that the Bible-ish ones, because I went to one where they got down on their knees to pray for at the end of the meeting in a circle. They got down on their knees and said the Lord's Prayer in Nebraska, and it was very uncomfortable. I wish there was something that said there are other meetings, like a reading in every meeting that said, you know, there are other meetings. We're not a, you know, this isn't the only one. And sometimes, you know, people that are desperate to go to AA or desperate to stop drinking will either come in through secular doors just because they don't want to hear the religious bullshit, but then they migrate into regular AA. And it's the same thing backwards. When I go to an AA meeting, a traditional one, I'm not vocal about it, but I definitely don't hide the fact that I'm an atheist. And we have people come into our group that way. I just I wanted to know about the difference between the U.S., if you know anything about the difference between U.S. and their opinion as far as AA goes and being delisted and stuff like that. So that's it.
Yeah, in the U.S., there have been some Ninth Circuit Court decisions that call AA religious. Of course, AA was never there to defend itself, and the only submissions that were offered by the defense were pages out of the Big Book, right? As if that was the holy writ of AA. Some say it is. AA doesn't say it is. And yeah, I mean, Yeah, AA existed long before there was any book. So, so in in the U.S., there is that precedent, although it's I think on pretty shaky grounds because it's never been disputed. It's just been so declared and never challenged. And in Canada, again, with the Human Rights Tribunal, human rights are the law. You can't violate someone's rights without being on the wrong side of the law. We're all about accommodation. Like, can someone with a minority opinion be accommodated in the larger whole? And they found a way to do that. Again, not in a, there was no ruling. Certainly Toronto Intergroup wanted to bring this, but we're religious by nature. We can discriminate argument. But I don't know what happened in that room. They dropped that approach. I don't know if that was pressure from GSO or the lawyers and the members being in a state of disagreement, but it's never been adjudicated in Canada. But there is this overwhelming idea, like in New York, there's a new law that is coming in where anyone being invited to treatment by the law has to be offered a secular alternative. And but by that, they mean a non-12-step alternative. So they have no awareness of any sort of secular 12-step alternative. That doesn't exist in their mind. So it's AA ought never be organized. I get that. But we do a piss-poor job at public information. And maybe that should be a topic at our next International Conference of Secular AA about how groups and regions could do more work to better inform the public about secular AA per se. In my own opinion, I would go to that meeting if someone put it on. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. So there is a question in the chat that says, the personal question I ask myself is, do I want to be associated with any organization that promotes religious belief and is becoming increasingly fundamentalist? And I wanted to respond to that to the group. I agree that unfortunately AA has become increasingly fundamentalist, but I have to wonder if that's because the zealots are just louder than we are. It seems to me that when I accepted that there just wasn't anything, I wasn't broken, that this God just didn't exist, and that my whole life became calmer. I stopped wanting to really fight back against a lot of things. Because why bother, you know? So I haven't been going back to mainstream meetings and telling people I'm an agnostic. I haven't been speaking out against it, but you can bet the Bible thumpers are. They are very loud, especially here in Georgia. It breaks my heart to hear that I moved out of Boca 2 years before I hit AA, and there was secular there. My whole life would have been different. It would have been better, I think, if I hadn't been fighting this feeling of I being broken. So I have to wonder, maybe that's because we are just quieter. Maybe if more of us could speak out, maybe it wouldn't be so fundamentalist. I know here in Georgia, it is absolutely like classified as a religious organization. Yeah, that's all I got. Thanks.
An inherent characteristic of fundamentalism is the idea is that there is this evil ready to consume them or attack them or destroy them, and it must be fought at every level. But I think just like the religious, the moral majority was neither. Mm-hmm. It was just a political movement. It wasn't the majority of Americans. and it wasn't moral. This idea that this is the one real true AA is a made up thing. And I don't believe it is the view of even the majority. I mean, case in point, they changed the preamble to be more progressive. They changed words in the 12 and 12 in the most recent iteration of the General Service Conference. They changed Bill Wilson's words, recognizing that lust, like rape, is not a sexual act, it is a violent act. And they changed Bill Wilson's words, which reflected a 1950s reality. They changed the idea that partnership was not a male and a female necessarily, and they changed that language. That's not huge, but it does suggest that AA as a whole has an eye towards a more inclusive, not an anti-religious, but a more inclusive view. Soon, I've been working on it forever, but I've got a blog coming out about the General Service Conference of Great Britain membership survey, which identified that of they asked their members, do you believe in a higher power? And 9 out of 10 did. And okay, is your higher power religious or secular? And 2/3 of them said their higher power was secular, non-religious. So I don't know what that means for sure, but I think it's interesting. Oh, more hands.
Definitely. You're up, darling.
I'm JW. Glad to be here. Always a fan of hearing Joe think and pontificate and express. So, yeah, you know, some people in this group, I think, know or knew that I'm pretty involved with NA and in the same area, like, you know, what about secular? And I noticed somebody said, do you think the rise in Christian nationalism in America is making it harder for agnostic groups to grow, especially in the South? In Virginia, only two groups exist. So I agree, being that I live in Tampa, Florida, and I have lived in over the years, I mean, I got clean in Seattle in 1979, but over the years, I have lived a lot in the South. And so there's this weird dichotomy, though, this weird thing that happens, and that a balance is always trying to strive there. And so, yes, there is a lot of conservatism in the South, but there's also, at the same time, the struggle, always the push against that. And so I think that always exists. I know for us, meaning a person who attends meetings in the South, and both in Zoom and on, you know, face-to-face, you know, I'm always, you know, so at first I had to learn how to express myself in a constructive way, right? So about 6 years ago, I had this hissy fit about, I'm tired of translating. I'm tired of, you know, yeah, translating the words and the verbiage and everything else. I'm sick of it. I'm not going to do it anymore. But I've since mellowed a little bit, and that brought me into, you know, the agnostic, you know, world and secular meetings and all the rest, and podcasts and all the rest, but and other resources for 12 steps and, you know, perspectives and points of view in my search for finding how to express myself in this way, you know. But I'll tell you, ever since I was new, I've never been one to buy any of that, right? Any of the really sort of super religious. It's just been the nature of my personality, and I haven't really cared. You know, that's me. But anyway, so I just I have some optimism, I guess, is what I'm saying, that a balance is always out there trying to happen, you know, and it's happening by, you know, expression, individuals, meetings, face-to-face meetings, Zoom meetings, literature, other things. You know, there's a lot going on. And so to me, there's a lot of hope for people to recover. In my own world, when I go to NA meetings, my goal is that I want the newcomer to know that I kind of stress the higher power is your choice. You decide. It's very personal. And although you might hear language this way or that way, you get to decide exactly what that looks like. And I always try and stress that because I want that newcomer who comes in the room to be able to say, well, wait a minute, what's this guy talking about? You know, so anyway, that's all I got. I really appreciate the topic and always enjoy Mr. Joe. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, just another thought. The question about this rise in fundamentalism, I mean, I think it is very definitely a reflection of what's happening in larger society. And perhaps through things like these rulings in courts, the changes in law. Their backs against the wall, you know. I think they're kind of seeing this. I discovered here in Northern Ireland, for instance, in the last year, a secular meeting was formed here in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland AA is really pretty fundamentalist. I did hear they had a prayer meeting for us, so I'm expecting to see the light any moment. But the group they're in, it's not recognized. It's not publicized through the general office or anything like that. So they decided to become more proactive, and they created the groups created a load of literature and stuff, and it's now, and we approached the health boards, and it was really interesting because their initial, because the name on it is Secular AA, but then approaching the health boards, their initial reaction was, oh no, we can't promote literature, we can't promote AA, and then requested a meeting and discovered, oh wait a minute, you're secular, yes we can, what we cannot do is promote a religious belief, an organization that's seen as being of a particular religious belief. And so actually they're now, while they're prepared to hold secular literature, they won't hold AA literature, which is really, but it's that sort of thing. I can understand why the traditionalists are going, oh shit, our way of life, our belief system is under threat. Also, of course, it's you know, it can be used. I mean, the political system, and particularly in the US at the moment, how can we not talk about what's happening there, where a minority group has taken power by mobilizing the beliefs because their God is under attack and their belief system is under attack, despite the fact them being a minority. And the other thing of the separation, I totally understand, you know, why sort of secular is dead within AA, because there's a difference. The believers are fundamentally united. There is a God. I don't care what you call it or anything like that, but God is God. And whereas secular, we are so diverse. We are actually so much more accepting of a lot of different things. It's how the hell would we write a big book? How the hell would we write 12 steps? We'd never agree on anything. And so I get that our own flexibility in some ways is why it's difficult to present a united front, because it looks different in different countries and different places and people with different views. I mean, are you atheist or agnostic? That's a huge difference, actually, you know. So we're not agreed. What we are is we're standing up against something as opposed to particularly standing for one thing. And that's where their strength lies. Their strength lies in the one and only God. And as long as you can put that banner above you, they will mobilize. And it's hard to fight. Anyway, thanks for having me.
Well, you remind me that in Toronto, I've from time to time, as I rotate through service positions, I'm involved in public information. And there came a time where the Toronto District School Board stopped inviting AA in as a sort of public service announcement type of thing, because their perception was that we were in fact religious.
I think it's a really interesting point you just brought up, in that what is the banner that we unite under? And maybe it's just me, but I feel like that is a really obvious answer. We're alcoholics. Like, why do we need another banner? We're not here because of a God or a religion or our beliefs. We're here because we have a problem drinking. We're here because we couldn't stop. And I maybe I'm just naive, but I feel like that should be enough. Robert?
Thank you. Thanks a lot. And thanks, Joe. I really get a kick out of all this research, and it's That blows my mind. I'm familiar with the Toronto case because I was the assistant GSR, or maybe I was the GSR for Village Agnostics New York City back around that time. And that came up at a couple of meetings, and there was a distinct lack of interest at the time. There were only four or five groups in New York City at that time, maybe six, but two of them were inaccessible. In terms of like getting to them, they were way up on the, they were small groups and they were way up on the Upper West Side, I believe, or Upper East Side. I can't remember. I'm talking from my own experience, but I know that they were poorly attended, but now there's like 13 or 14. And New York is of course not a microcosm of the greater AA. It's its own distinct ecosystem, but I had to travel around that time during the recession for work. And I was out in Missouri and, Southern Illinois, and there was no agnostic AA that I knew of in, or it wasn't advertised, but there were free thinkers. They had their own little meetings that weren't associated with AA, and they were very quiet about that particular crossing that line into AA. That said, when I was out there, I would talk to those people. I was on the night shift, so I couldn't go to that meeting, but I did learn a lot from those people just from hanging out with them at the earlier meetings during the day. Anyway, that said, I think in 2010, 2011, there were only in America, in the United States, the only 15 to 20% of the population considered themselves secular. And I think that's doubled since that time. I'm pretty sure. And that, that means there are no identification with any church in America. So even if the populations are becoming more polarized, they're having less of an effect on the general population. It's actually diminishing. Their intensity is much more hyper-focused, but it's having less of an effect. And you're right. Mm-hmm. They're going kicking and screaming and clawing into that good night, but they will have to share that power. Ultimately, I think there's I haven't been to a convention, and you can correct me on this one. You can correct me on any of these points I made that maybe I might be in error of, and I wouldn't mind it, or point me in a direction of that information. A lot of what we do is anecdotal, and I have a hard time with that. I can't really, everyone's got a region and an area and stuff, and there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that points in particular directions. But if there is some kind of barometer, I thought it would be the convention in the United States, which is a massive event. And don't they have it? They have a large agnostic meeting. It's like 2,000 to 3,000 people go to it.
Yeah.
And I think that grows every year. That's like something that becomes much broader and more encompassing. And so that's another sort of like indicator of hope for me, like all of it. And I have to say, I've dropped the ball. I do a lot of ecumenical work. I'm always in conventional AA. I've been there. I'm concentrating more in my local area, at the homeless shelter, at my local places. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much carry the banner of, you know, I am responsible and that's it. I don't sort of push anything. And whatever the pro forma stuff is, I deal with it as I go. But I'm always letting people know that I'm here and this is my own thing to transmit. My thing is I'm here as an agnostic. I'm not here because I believed in a God or any of that. I came into this without a belief. I'm here 18 years plus, still mm-hmm. without that deity. And I'm, you know, I love a battle. So this is what keeps me coming. Again, I appreciate everyone's sentiment here. But I'd like to stay away from like too much anecdotal stuff, even though it interests me. It's like, I want to like move more like towards like the hard facts of things. But, you know, that game is sort of being diminished, I think, the real hard line fundamentalist. I don't know if it's growing. If that one statistic I have is anything, it means that their power is diminishing ultimately. Mm-hmm. So thank you for letting me share. And thanks again.
A couple of things come to mind there. Thank you, Robert. One is the in the white paper, the General Service Conference is targeted as part of the problem, as evildoers, because they're so permissive. And since 1990, there in Seattle, Washington, there has always been a We Agnostics panel at the every 5-year World Convention. And it's in the program. It's all part of AA. And in 2020, when it was going to be in Detroit, we were invited as sort of secular AA to have our own hospitality suite. And we would have been in the program. If you're looking for secular AA members, they're in room such and such at such and such a hotel. But of course, that got canceled. So the General Service Conference, if we roll our eyes at their slowness to action and that sort of stuff, they're more deeply despised by the fundamentalist for their liberalness. And New York, the New York Agnostic AA website did fall into this sort of fundamentalist movement. Someone complained because at one point, certainly in 2009, when we started our meeting, my first agnostic atheist meeting ever was in New York. I planned a trip to New York to catch a couple. And they did have an agnostic version of the 12 steps on the website, AA NYC Agnostic or whatever it's called. And were asked by someone from the General Service Conference, I think Naomi was the list keeper at the time, said, you can't do that. You can't have that there. Like, just, I don't know if she was acting on her own sense of what AA is or what AA wasn't, because the San Francisco, I think it's aaagnostics.org, they grabbed that website first. They still have and have always had agnostic 12 steps. So it gets very regional in terms of how these things are interpreted and how much oversight a central office should have and that sort of thing. But the agnostics in New York didn't fight it. They said, you want it gone? We'll take it off. You know, we're not that excited about them anyway. So it's still not there, but some of our inspiration to write our own steps came from the original New York Agnostic AA website.
Okay, do we have anybody else who had a question or a comment before we stop recording?